free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free, young hearts run free! Welcome to season 4, episode 1 of the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. I'm John Cassidy. We've also got Mr. Stephen Watt here. How are you doing, Stephen?
I am excited.
Brilliant. Good. Because what I'm going to do, I'm going to take you on a wee journey just now. Previously, at the end of season 3, we spoke about Stephen going down. We've mentioned it a few times. Stephen going down to London. Most recently, we discussed it with Bob Turner. And the, I don't know if that was recorded or if that was off recording, but we certainly spoke with Bob about London and about preparations and swankering and all that sort of stuff. But let me set the scene. Imagine a modern day Dick Whittington. He's going to London. He's in search of gold. The streets are paved with gold. Now imagine that Dick Whittington had on a pair of Nike Vaporflies. What do you think would happen there? We're just about to find out. Last Saturday, Stephen set down on his way to London to run the London Marathon 2021, which took place on the 3rd of October. And this episode is going to be dedicated to speaking about that, to find out all about it, how it went. So we promised you at the end of season 3, big things in season 4. Didn't get much bigger than this. So let's find out from Stephen how his journey to London worked out for him last weekend. So Stephen, let's start with your preparations. How was your body in preparation for the 3rd of October?
John, thank you very much for that lead-in.
You're very welcome.
Some thought and preparation. Nice. Just call me Dick.
You know Twitter's going to go off, isn't that with that, eh?
No, my preparation was, let's start the preparation in July. Oh, obviously I'll be going like, oh, we're not starting the preparation back in July, are we? Because the end of July heralded the start of the sort of training block for London after the ultra marathon sort of training block that had come before that. So the start of the marathon training block was the first week of August, but I did decide to throw in the Speyside Way Ultra Marathon at the end of August for the to scratch the ultra itch. So that training block didn't quite pan out the way that I had it planned in my head, only because of the ultra marathon that I decided to plonk in it. But I got more benefit out of that than the negative fact that the impact on my training plan. So that's cool. But it's very much switching from trail running, running up hills, to running back on tarmac, road running type thing. So for me, that has a wee bit of a harsher effect on my body just because of the terrain and stuff like that. And I feel that my body can suffer it for so long before it starts aching.
Sorry, and, just let me jump in there. When you say so long, are you talking about so long on one run or so long in a training block doing that type of stuff?
Yeah, so long in a training block. Maybe it's a mental thing where I almost feel that I reach a threshold that if I start pushing beyond that, then the aches and pains that I manage are going to become unmanageable. And I probably got to that point quite close up to London where I was like, oh, you know, my glutes were getting sore. I've got sciatic issues that have kind of bugged me for quite a few years, and they seem to be heightened with more road running and more intense running for me, more intense paced running. So I was probably getting to that point where I needed my taper, and during the taper where things usually start feeling even worse because you're dropping miles and things are starting to repair, I was getting a real tender pain in my left Achilles and also in my heel, weirdly. That I did put down to start off with a bit of paranoia, but you know that yep. Maranoia. But it wasn't that, because I did try and run in the week up to London, and I was like, oh, that's no comfy. So I did. I had a real easy peasy week on the lead up because of that, and I was icing it.
That's no like you today, easy peasy. And that's my opinion of you. You tend to, well, suppose, Kim, taper, maybe we should speak about that. Taper's different for everybody, isn't it? People taper in different ways. Some folk like me, they feck all, just relax and ease the legs up and get the legs off the ground and take it easy. But for some people, sorry, let me go back to the very start here, because for people who are listening in, who maybe haven't done a half marathon or a marathon or something like that, or any type of event, then tapering is what we speak about the week to 10 days before you're doing the event, but you're giving your body, your training's been done, your body a wee chance to relax, and then when you go to that start line, you are in tip-top condition. That's, in a nutshell, that's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well put, John.
Thank you. Some people will still go and do a 5K, a 10K, whatever they want to do, because it's, I don't know if it's mentally, you're challenging yourself to not do anything. It can be quite hard not to do anything. Sometimes when you miss a few days without a run, yeah. You feel you're losing your fitness, which you're not.
No.
So, and the last time we spoke, actually, just before you went to London, you were sitting rubbing your heel with a golf ball on the ground, weren't you?
Yeah, I was just feeling a bit of plantar pain, which was a new one for me. But it seemed to help, and I was sensible, and I didn't run on it, and I kind of had less time on my feet. But I was still feeling it, you know, on the train on the way down to London. Like, feel that. It was nagging away. But I just decided I'll just block it.
Again, just want to go back again a wee bit. You mentioned the term maranoia. Now, for folk that are maybe away looking at a thesaurus or a dictionary, explain maranoia for us, please.
Yeah, maranoia is that mental state that you get in during your taper, usually, where you've invested quite a lot emotionally into this training block. You've done a lot of thinking about race day. Do you know, for some people, it'll completely consume their world. You know, you can hardly concentrate on your day job sometimes because your whole focus is this big, huge goal that you've set yourself, a running a marathon. So paranoia and marathon, a portmanteau, maranoia.
Right, okay. I'm not even going to attempt that other word. Right, cool. Thank you very much for that. So you mentioned there, on the train. Train down to London.
Yep.
Event. Hassle free.
Oh, I absolutely loved my train journeys, both up and down. Down and up, rather, to London.
Aye.
Because it was good.
Nice, let's be honest, we love our families, but it's not often we get time to ourselves, is it?
We absolutely adore our families, but the ability to sit on a train for 5 hours and feel like you're on a beautiful spa weekend away is what comes to us at a certain age and vintage.
You went in the Saturday, didn't you?
I went down early Saturday morning. And,
early Saturday. So did you go to your digs when you got there, or did you go straight to the expo?
Straight to the expo. So into Euston it was, and got the DLR out to the XL, which is just a good 45 minutes out to there, and I can understand why they have it there. I mean, it's a huge facility, it's massive, as we've spoken about before, but it's a bit of pain, isn't it, that you have to go there, and that there couldn't be a some kind of bib pickup more central to London. But anyway, that's maybe greedy. I'm sure there's commercial agreements in place and such like that need to be boxes need to be ticked and all that stuff. But yeah, I went out to Expo and it was mobbed.
And the thing is, it's a big venue, probably the right size for the Expo, for the London Marathon. But I've been before, but not during or I don't know if they're in post-pandemic, but not during the pandemic. So was it different then? It was a case of just marched into the hall. Was there a queuing system this time? Or?
Yeah, it was really, I got there maybe at around about 1:30, 1:00, and it was really busy, and there was masses of queues. What you did is you were dropping your kit bag off with anything you wanted for the finish line. You were doing that first, so the queues were to drop your kit bag off that you'd been sent previously, and you put in your kit bag like a hoodie, any little snacky snooze.
So you did that on the Saturday?
Did that on the Saturday, because there was no baggage trucks at Greenwich at the start line.
Let's explain that then, because normally at Greenwich I've got these articulated lorries.
Yeah, and you throw your bag on them. So it was to obviously...
Then they go to the mall.
Yep, it was obviously to lessen touch points and stuff like that. Okay. So that's what you did. You got sent your bag in the post the week before. You filled it with anything that you wanted for your start line. You handed it in the first queue at the expo, and they put in your bag, your finisher's t-shirt, your medal, a bottle of water, bottle of Lucozade, and then put it in a crate. And then that baggage truck system was replicated, but actually you handed it in at expo, and then the baggage truck went through.
Even with all that information that comes at you, did you see MD on Sunday morning in Greenwich with a bag on their back wanting to hand it in?
I didn't actually. None.
Good. So the system worked. Brilliant. Because I would probably been that guy going, where's the fucking truck? Right. That's good.
Yeah. So it did that. And then you went from the kit bag drop off hall through to the main registration hall to pick up your race bib. The queues for that weren't quite as bad. One thing I must say, when I was just entering the kit bag queue in the hall itself, Martin Gray, who's an avid listener and always reaches out to us and stuff and loves listening, and he winner of Pylon Exposure.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, he was
clocked me and came over and gave me a big hire, and it was fantastic to see him. So it was brilliant to meet you, Martin. But then you picked up your race bib, and then the expo itself, which is usually loads of stands and stuff, it was much the same, but I felt it was a bit lower key. There wasn't quite so much going on, because I don't think they wanted people hanging around for quite as long. We wanted to get them out and back out of the XL and away again. I mean, there's still plenty of opportunities to buy race merch and all that kind of jazz, but there wasn't, I don't know, maybe it was maybe my perception on it. So I just kind of floated through that, didn't really see anything that I wanted to have.
It might just be people too. Some people might not be that keen to, sounds a bit crazy, but no keen to be in big crowds. But you can avoid the crowds as much as you can.
Yeah.
But that would mean less people being in that area of the expo, which is usually packed. Folk just lashing money at whatever stall you're at. You know what I mean? Give me five of them, all the sizes. All the colours, all them.
All those impulse buys, because you're on that sort of, throw caution at the wind.
I'm bearing with the Argos book in about October. I want that. So.
Yeah. And you're armed with a credit card or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, no, I just got out of there, back into the main, back out of the expo. One thing I must say, though, when I came at the expo, I was looking for the other show that was on, kind of gluten-free show. Anyway, because that's usually April, there was a different show on, John, this year.
What was on?
You're going to be pretty Leeds United excited by this.
Okay.
It was the Cake and Bake Show.
Oh, yeah. It was their samples.
Oh, I wanted to get in, did I? I just walked past the entrance and you just come springing right into my head.
You didn't even try and blag your way in.
Honestly, there was folk coming out with big and huge boxes of cakes stuff, and they were all excited as anything, because that's their highlight of the year. So
we'll touch very briefly on cakes and diets in a wee while, right?
Okay.
We'll do that in a wee while. But what I'm interested to know, and this has been a cause for concern, I think I've been to London three times, and it's that train in and out of the expo. How busy was that?
Aye. It was busy. Standing room only.
Right. Because, I mean, literally, literally it's been like packed sardines previously, you know.
I wouldn't say quite as bad as that, almost a level down for that, but busy, but well organized as usual, and moving, and do you know any queues that I did join that looked horrendous and thought, oh, that's going to be, you're going to be standing that for an hour, we're quickly getting processed.
That's good.
So, you know, they were geared up for it. You could see all the attempts that they were making to lessen risk associated with COVID and stuff. But at the end of the day, there's only so much they can do, and then there's so much that's up to humans and their behaviour.
Aye, exactly that. And you know what? Because I've seen all the social media stuff after or the weekend of London, and it's all positive, and everybody's waxing lyrical about what a great global event it is. And I was, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, aye, they're not telling you about the trains, are they? So it's good to hear that some action had taken place, because that is one of the things that I know can, if you're a pair, I didn't have any bother with being claustrophobic, but if you're a person that is bothered by that, these trains are not very pleasant. So that's good to hear about doing what they did. Yeah. So you're at the expo, you're back in the big smoke. How was your digs?
Yeah, brilliant. Stayed in a hotel in Paddington, which was, it was bra, nice and comfy place, modern, and had plenty of options around it for eating. That's all I needed. It was all good. Got my bags and all that dropped off because I'd been horsing them around, you know, since I'd gotten off the train, backpacking that. So I was glad to get rid of them and just went for a wee donder and got some scran.
We'll get to the scran in a minute. Were you conscious of no wanting to walk too far, because that can be something that happens, isn't it? You're not wanting to put you're not wanting to walk 8 miles, you know.
Definitely no. That's a lesson learned from previous experiences. I think when I did my first marathon, it was New York in 2006, and I got a wee bit carried away the day before the marathon, shall we say,
and sightseeing and stuff. Eh?
Oh, and just being in Manhattan and got a ticket. Oh, wait a minute, I'm walking past Madison Square Gardens, and it was like, you know, 5 o'clock or something. The marathon in New York is sort of 6 o'clock. You go to the bus pickup point to take you to the start line, so you're up at 4:30, whatever, did you know it, in New York to the marathon. It was 5 o'clock on the Saturday night, and I was like walking, and I'd met this lad, because I was over there on my own, this boy from Sunderland, and he was an offie laddie, kind of like leading me astray.
We walked
past Madison Square Gardens, and he's like, oh, let's go in and see if we can get tickets for the basketball that's on tonight. And I'm like, yes, let's do it. And so we got tickets for the New York Knicks or whatever.
Brilliant.
And the tip off for that was like at 8 o'clock. It come out of there at 11 o'clock. Still had eaten. I haven't had any scran, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm getting up in 5.5 hours to do my first ever marathon. Wait a minute, get something to eat. Anyway, lessons learned from
The good news is, in New York, you can get something to eat at that time of night. You're not struggling to get something to eat. Street food in New York is brilliant. So
Korean place, it was amazing. It was all sticky rice and all. Anyway.
Let's come back to London 2021.
Let's do it. This is for another time.
So what was your food on the Saturday night in preparation for the Sunday?
You know what? I booked in advance an Italian nearby the hotel that I thought just usual. Get pasta, usual stuff that I eat before a race day. And it was fine. Sitting there, lone diner. Place was mobbed because I think there was a lot of other marathoners just doing exactly the same thing in Italian. Place was mobbed, sitting there in the corner, lone diner, magic in and out.
You sitting with your iPad watching running films?
Well, I was going to, I didn't realise it was doing in a basement, this Italian, so there was no signal. So I actually just had some time to myself.
That's good. Switch off all that technology stuff.
I concentrated on my food. I actually read it that sometimes you don't appreciate your food if you're on devices at the same time you're eating it, and your brain isn't processing the taste on your tongue and all that kind of stuff. So there's a top tip.
You're listening in, Karen, much?
Get your phone down when you're eating.
There you go. So, but that's good, because that you're obviously learning from prior experience, and also when you're saying just having your standard sort of pasta dish, that's a lesson learned too. Didn't change it if you know what works for you.
Yep. You know? Like lasagna, cheese and dairy, I'm all right with. Some folk will think that's maybe going to go a wee bit of rubbish in your stomach. I'm cool with it. More cheese, lather it on. Cheesy garlic bread and then a big basket of normal bread and butter tea. So I'm well carb loaded afterwards. And then your point around about trying to keep my step count almost down to a minimum that day, I was conscious of that. And also just like no being a rush, you know, just be relaxed and try and have a time to be anywhere. Do you know, fair enough, I had to book a table for something. But just like, okay, I need to walk there to there. That's about a 15-minute walk. Well, I'll go and make it a 20-minute walk a day. Just like mosey. If you can get away with it. It's not always possible. I could get away with it last weekend.
I think that's the beauty as well of going on your own. You didn't have to think about, right, got to get the kids there, what are they going to eat, got to get back, get them to bed, all that sort of stuff. That pressure's gone.
To completely and utterly make it clear to my wife Fiona how much I appreciated that.
Oh, listen, I'm sure you will repay that compliment a number of times over. Sure, but you know what? All this will come to fruition as we progress through this chat, because I think you had a very good experience, and it's all down to that. This is part of the preparation, though. Uh-huh. You know, it's not just about going out running. It's about what you're doing. And I think what you're describing there is you were giving yourself headspace, and all you were carrying about was your body. You had nothing else to think about.
Brilliant. Walking had been, as Graham Connolly said, everything else had been taken. All the stones had been taken out of my basket and dropped. And that is fantastic. There you go. I'm taking advice that I'm genuinely getting from guests who have come into Young Hearts Run Free and putting it into practice. So brilliant. On the Saturday night after I had a meal, because I'd done and dusted my meal by 7 o'clock, because you're in your A&A, so you know.
You're lathered in right about it, man.
I was like, right, I still need to keep my step count down. I then ought to go back to the hotel and sit there for, you know, until March of the Day comes on.
Aye.
Right, so I'm like, I'm going to the cinema. Moseyed away to the cinema, sat on my arse, watched a film. Many Saints in New York, I'm a big Sopranos fan, capiche?
Ah, yeah. I've not seen the film. Big Sopranos fan, but I've not seen the film. I've seen it spoken about.
So,
No spoilers.
Did that actually? Wasn't it on? Every place was Bond. Every place was just showing Bond blanket. So it was hard to find a cinema showing it. I found one just in Leicester Square. Paid the price. But it was good. Just tubed there. Tubed back right to hotel. Hame for match of the day.
Well, that's interesting, because that's on about 10:30 on a Saturday night, isn't it? What time did you shut your eyes at?
Well, I watched Match of the Day and then fell asleep. 11:30.
Sleep well?
Bro. Slept really good. Had the alarm set for 6:15. So had a good, you know, 6.5 hours in that. And I wasn't up during it, so I was like, that's good. Mm-hmm. I'd slept good during the week. I'd eaten good during the week. I think that's a big thing for me, is eating good on the lead up week. So I try and eat good most of the time, but there's blips. Do you know, I'm an 80-20. Eat good 80% of the time, 20% of the time.
And you mentioned Martin Gray and exposure, and I think I picked up loads during that. There were a couple of inspiration, we never called them that, but a couple of nights it was presentations, and I think I picked that up there. I think I've heard it before, but it was reaffirmed to me there that the week prior to an event is as important as the event itself and your preparation. So getting that sleep in. Because you know what, if it's your first or your second or whatever type of marathon it is, you might not sleep well. So having that in the bank, that you've slept well, maybe the Wednesday, Thursday or the Friday night is good. It's great you weren't up during the night, because I'm up for a pee at least twice.
See, I was up for a pee, but I was well hydrated and stuff, so I felt that gives me another positive in my head. Do you know, it transfers over to being a positive thing. Okay, so ate shitloads of avocados during the week, and that for me makes me feel more positive. It's just maybe just a thought that it doesn't actually have any impact. I could have ate pizza every night, but in my head I've ate nuts and avocados.
Right, getting yourself in the right place. Yeah. And even, you're right, it could all be that, we talk about it a lot too, the placebo thing.
Yeah.
But come on, if it works, it works. Great. Regardless. So, it's race day morning.
Ooh.
How far do you go? How far do you go to get to Greenwich?
I'd done all that sussing out how I'm getting to Greenwich, so it was like Bakerloo line from Paddington to London Bridge, and then it's the normal train London Bridge out to Greenwich, but 45 minutes to get out there. So I left the, you were given a time slot that you had to arrive at Greenwich at the start line, so that they could control the waves, because it was all going in waves, so everybody wasn't due to arrive at the same time. So that kept still busy, but it kept it, the filter of people was more spaced out.
And did it work?
I thought it did. I thought that there was some little, do you know, I keeping in mind that they've had to make quite a number of big changes for the normal process, and that normal process is like a well-oiled machine. Do you know, it's brilliant. The organisation and the infrastructure and logistics at London are second to none, right? Let's just say that.
It sounds like they've upped their game as well and put a lot of thought and consideration into this organisation, because
they did.
Part of the big, again, part of the stuff that I would be thinking about is that travel to the start, because that can be quite chaotic, depending on when you choose to go. I would always choose to go early. But if you miss that first by half an hour, it's then mental.
Yeah. You know? One thing I hadn't done, I was on my way on the tube from Paddington to London Bridge, and I realised, shit, I've not had a coffee. Right? John, didn't give me that look. Right, I hadn't had a coffee. And I thought to myself, yeah, I really need a coffee. Do you know, I'd eaten okay. I'd had a bit, some breakfast, my usual stuff. I hadn't had my coffee. So I decided when I got to London Bridge, I'm going up to the street to find a coffee shop to get a flat white, because I had it in my head all of a sudden as a negative.
Mm.
So I went up, got a nice coffee, and then sat on the train to Greenwich and supped that, so that I had ticked my coffee box.
Brilliant, I love it.
So, yeah, and then the train from London Bridge out to Maze Hill, that was where I was to get off, which is where you and I got off.
Mm-hmm.
Each other, that's where we got off the train.
It's a good day.
The train out there was pretty packed with runners, and a train carriage full of nervous marathon runners isn't a place you really want to be in terms of the little passings of winds. Everybody's kind of arse is starting to begin to collapse, shall we say. Yeah. So anyway, I noted that and got off the train pretty sharpish when I arrived in Maze Hill, and then up to the start line. I was on the green start line, which is at the top of Greenwich Park. What's the Blackheath Park, yep, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the hill. So it's a hefty hill,
isn't it? Fine.
Folk running up there. You're doing running, why are you expending energy running up quite a hill? And I'm like, if I could mosey any slower, I am moseying up there, you know, and just taking everything in. But I'm certainly no thinking about running up to the start line. In my head, I'm thinking, I'm going up this hill to the start line, and I was thinking, visualizing it in my head, it's like I'm in a roller coaster car and I'm going up to the top of a hill, and then when I get to the top of the hill, I'm going to fucking belt down the other side. It so happened that that other side was after the start line.
So
I was in wave two, green start, wave two, so the masses were going away at 9:30. My start time was 9:36 to 9:39.
Brilliant. And all go like clockwork at the start.
Brilliant. Cool. No sweat.
And we're going in these waves, again, the start of these mass events.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really been in a big event like that, but the start of these mass events, it can be quite tight.
Yep.
People running about you. Did it feel like that, or did you feel you had plenty of room?
It was, you know, I wouldn't say plenty of room, but more room than normal. So it made that you weren't quite as, you know, the LBs weren't quite as sharp, needing, you know, to assert yourself. But you were also you know, I'd put in my estimated finish time. So you were running with people who had similar goals and objectives of the race than you did. So you kind of got into that pack of people running at a pace that, that you wanted to be running at, rather than coming up against somebody who was, you know, doing a slower mile than you maybe wanted to, and then you're dodging around them. So you, the flow was better.
Aye, good. And how was your first mile? You off like a bullet, or were you managed? Did you manage it in your head?
I was trying to manage it. Certainly, I was. What I was trying to do. My race plan was to kind of run the first half at around about seven minute miles. But I knew fine the first 4 miles at London are you're both adrenaline is pumping quite high. Plus it is downhill. It's a nice easy start. But what you've got negative wise is it's busy. It's busiest then. So there is a wee bit of forced weaving and stuff, especially when you join other waves at points, they merge. And that's when it goes from being right, oh, it's thinning out, and then join another wave and it gets busy again. And maybe they're running at different paces. So you need to be aware of that. So I tried to temper it, but also I wanted to use those opening 4 miles to get some seconds in the bank.
Yeah, cool. You've obviously put a lot of thought into achieving, or what would give you the best opportunity to achieve what you were hoping to do.
It was good. So can you get up to Cutty Sark? It's 6 miles in, actually, Cutty Sark. I thought last week it was less than that.
Aye.
Get up to Cutty Sark and you're 10K. You know, so you're thinking that's a no bad wee first sort of place to check your splits.
And what was the streets like? Because the streets of London are normally, I'm talking about the people in the houses and the flats and stuff at the side. Was that the same atmosphere? You've normally got guys DJing off their balcony and things like that. Was that all the same?
I think during the first 4 miles or so, it wasn't the same. The last time when I was there with you, John, you passed quite a lot of flats with balconies and stuff, and there were people basically with sound systems and everything out. I didn't even notice that quite as prevalent this year, and I felt it was quieter until you get down to Greenwich and things started really getting busier. A lot of the pubs and things that you pass at London are having a real, real good day, aren't they? A real good jamboree, and it looks like a good excuse for locals to get melted, for folk to come and enjoy their shell, pump music, pumping bands playing and things like that. Time you got to Greenwich and through Greenwich and into, is it Rotherhite? Things were starting to, I feel a bit more ramped up.
That's good.
I'd say not as many people on the streets watching, but still, and usually London is jam-packed all the way around, and there's an exceptionally high amount of people. But there were still enough people on the streets to certainly make it feel as if you were, there was never a point where you were thinking, oh, there's nobody here really interested in this.
Different days, a different time of year. April's generally sort of Easter time, the weather's good. I suppose the weather was good. Well, we've not spoke about the weather. How was the weather?
The weather, race day weather was pretty nifty, actually. The temperature was quite a cool, calm start to the morning. I'd been worried, I think we spoke about the wind. There had been wind forecast for Sunday. When it got down on Saturday, it was teeming down a rain, and there was a fair old breeze on the Saturday, and I think it had kind of passed through a wee bit earlier than the forecast. Because on the Sunday in the morning it was calm, but the wind had been forecast to pick up in the afternoon, and that certainly happened. It picked up as the race wore on, the wind to become noticeable. And where you wanted it to be for you, it was against you.
Right, okay.
But like, maybe it was more in my head. Don't know. But there was certainly a headwind in the last 5 miles that I was tucking in behind some folk just to get a wee bit of draft.
Let's be honest, it's very rarely with you, is it? Or it very rarely feels like it's with you.
That's true. But generally, the sun came out and it got a bit warm. That was unexpected.
You wear too many clays, man. Seeing your photos, you've got too many clays on.
What do you mean?
You're wearing a layer and your vest. Just go with the vest. But you like it. You like a layer, don't you? You like that? Is it a compression layer you have on?
Aye. I should probably get like a sleeveless layer, you know, because basically that's to save me putting plasters on my nipples.
Right. Good tip. That's this week's golden nugget so far.
Yeah, there'll be a few.
Well, you know what? There's been a few so far. I hope people are picking up on them about the preparation and.
Yeah,
because that's so important. On you go.
No. So I floated along. Do you know the first 10K? Happy so, where I was sitting. Time.
Right. I'm going to jump then for 10K to Tower Bridge. How are you feeling at Tower Bridge?
Brand new.
Everything going to plan.
Yeah, everything going to plan. Feeling good.
The song in there. Talk about fueling then. What were you using?
I was using. So there was Lucozade Sport and Lucozade Sport gels out on the course. Okay. I couldn't tell you how much I didn't want to use them. Mm-hmm. So I ruled that out. There was plentiful water stops and little bottles, the tiny wee bottles of Buxton, which was great. So anytime I passed a water stop, I took a bottle, took a glug, squirted out the rest and threw it as per the instructions. Just to hear a gulp of water every time. I ran with a 500ml of active fruit in a soft flask. Peppermint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had Mountain Fuel sports jellies times three at half an hour, 55 minutes, and an hour and a half. And then I had Cliff Shot Blocks times six after, like, you know, just when I could take them. So, and then the active fruit bottle eventually was empty, and it's because it's a soft flask, you can, you know, just stuff it in my pocket. And then that was serving me well enough, yeah, but until about 22 miles. And then I was like, I need something else now. And I had a secret weapon.
Oh.
Because usually at this point in an ultramarathon or something like, you'd think this is flat coke time.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a flip belt on, you know,
yeah,
one of these flip belts, and I had a 250ml soft flask in it with active root in it. So 250ml with a full portion of active root in it. So it was almost like, in my head, it was more like, it's like, this is concentrated active root.
Oh, it's that double strength shit.
Double strength active
root. So wait a minute, you're talking about active root granules or the mix?
Granules.
So it's just the drink. It's
the drink. Concentrated, right. Yeah, and that went down really, really well at that stage. I needed that because I felt I was staving off hamstring cramps at that point. And which
do you think you timed that right then?
Aye, I'm glad that I had to, because I was like, 250ml soft flask on my waist the whole way around. You know, I was like, that's a bit of, that could get annoying. Just you know, but no, I didn't notice it up until that point, and then I gladly remembered it was there and got tore into it.
And when you just while we're talking about that, the flip belt, is that separate to the short? What shorts were you wearing? Your Ron Hills?
I was wearing my Ron Hill Ultra shorts with all the different pockets, the ones that you ordered, I think.
10 pockets in it or something. So
aye.
Was your gel in that, or was it an extra flip belt you had on?
No, the flip belt was basically the soft flask and my phone. That was
right,
it.
Okay.
All my gels and stuff were located in pockets in my shorts, which were great.
So the shorts served the purpose that you wanted?
Mostly. They did they serve the total purpose, John?
Oh, was there a wee pseudo cream moment, potentially? Should have had more pseudo cream on.
I couldn't have put more pseudo cream on if I tried.
Ah, so, okay.
The shorts fucking at the crotch, they've got a hole way at the crotch during the run.
Oh, man.
Aye.
Man. And that's when the old rubbing happens, eh? With that wee bits of thread and, nightmare. So what will you do the next time? You put a pair of knacks on?
I don't know, man. I need to find, if anybody's got the same issue as me and they've got, like, chubby thighs that rub when you're running. I run in two and one shorts all the time, or an undershort or whatever, but I've yet to find the short that stands the test of time.
Aye. No, so, and I totally get that. And I see the Ron Hall shorts. I bought them. I've worn them twice because I'm thinking I'm not wanting them getting worn away before a day an event.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I just, I've now come on to wear separate liners and then shorts.
Yeah.
And I just replace the liners when they happen. I'm on about my third or fourth set of the Danish Exposure or something they're called. But because I've had serious shit going down.
Aye. Okay, well, what I mean? I'm sitting here just now in the complete scud. in the sauna, in the scud, and hoping that my chaffed legs are enjoying the breeze. I'm not really sitting here in the scud, just for your those listening who have got a bad thought in their head.
That's okay, man. That's okay.
So that was just showing in hydration. It went mostly okay.
Mm-hmm. So we last distance we spoke about was Tower Bridge. You then leave that to go through that, probably what I would call the boring bit, the marathon.
I think the boring bit is between Greenwich and Tower Bridge.
That, okay.
You feel, you know, Surrey Quays and Rotherhite and stuff. It's a bit just, you know, nothing much.
Well done on kenning the names of these bits. I just run through it and not got a scooby where I am. I see that big boat, right? Came with that. It's like, it's crack on.
Yeah. So just after Tower Bridge and you turn right is half marathon.
Yep.
And I had a goal time that I wanted to kind of be at half marathon. Mm-hmm. So, and also that's where the charity that was running for spinal research were set up with their little, so all the charities are set up round at that point because you get runners twice on the way back as well. So I got a good scream from them on the way past and good. Made sure that they saw me and stuff. So it was through half marathon in 1:31, which was just on, right on bang where I wanted to be.
Brilliant.
I thought I'd be on marathon around about 1:31. And I was through marathon, half marathon, and 1:31:03.
On the money, but how were you feeling about that? Did you feel comfortable within yourself, or were you feeling a wee bit bloy? How were you?
I was fine. I was fine. I was floating along. I was cool.
Brilliant. Okay, so you up and through the Docklands.
Up and through the Docklands, Isle of Dogs, wee bitty. Mm-hmm. And then it's a flat course. It's got like 350 foot of climb or something for 26 miles. It's flat, but there is a few wee just rises that kind of drain in your legs. And you do that, and then you run up to Canary Wharf, up to the tall buildings there, and that's where it was busy again, like last time we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're around about 19, 20 miles by the time you get to Canary Wharf. And it's like, because it's an easy spot for spectators to get to, and the underground and DLR links are easy from there. It's where everybody congregates. You know, it's a really popular viewing point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a sensory overload running through Canary Wharf. Because the noise of the crowds, there's bands playing in every corner, you're running through tunnels and there's noise, it's pinging about, and it's just like, you're glad to get out of it. Well, I am. I'm like, I know the energy boost that you're kind of getting it from it as well, but you're also just glad to see the back of it, because it's like, bloody hell, man, that your heat's kind of going a bit bananas, you know?
Yeah.
So you get out of Canary Wharf, everybody in Canary Wharf who runs and uses like Garmin or Strava, things like that, you lose your signal when you run around Canary Wharf because of the height of the buildings and GPS signal getting lost. So it came up, I did that a 5:30 mile. But, you know, mile 19:20. I'm like that. I am a dream. I wasn't running 5:30-minute miles at mile 20. Trust me.
Aye, and then you're getting to the bit of the marathon that I remember as, right, I've done that. I've not done it, but I know I'm going to finish. You're getting to that. I'm not saying that you were ever in doubt about if you would finish or not, but you approach that bit where, I don't know, you get a second burst of adrenaline because you're literally on the home straight then, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And you can start thinking about that last, if it's going to be a last hour, if it's going to be a last 50 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever speed you're going at.
Yeah, I think for me, I got up to 20, 21 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Quite almost feeling like I was just pressing play in my training, and you know, everything was just doing what it should have been doing.
Your Strava shows that. Your Strava shows that. Yeah.
And I was trying to push back that feeling that I'm now needing to work as far as I could. You know?
Yeah.
So I think I pushed it to about 22 miles. Some people would probably call this is then hitting the wall, you know, if we wanted to use that term. But it's then how you cope with and manage that feeling. And if, like me, you've done a few marathons and it's a familiar feeling and you've got tactics of how to try and cope with it or even just accept it. Mine's like, okay, that bottle of active fruit, 250ml bottle of active fruit there, you know, because around it at that point is where you turn and start making your way back along the embankment.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see all the sights. You know, this is all the money shots.
This is your Big Ben's and all these House of Parliament, all that carrier.
London Eye, you know, Five Guys Burger Joint everywhere. Yeah, but it was at that point that the headwind was really noticeable as well. So you're getting tired, you're pushing on, you're trying to kind of, for me, I was trying to stave off a feeling that I felt that hamstring cramps weren't awfully far away, right? And at Berlin 2018, it was hamstring cramps that stopped me in my tracks around about 23, 24 miles, okay? So I'm thinking to myself, right, get up to 23 miles, it's a 5K, it's a park run home.
Yeah.
Okay, kick on, like empty your tank, Stephen. But if I emptied my tank at that point, those hamstring cramps were going to stop me and I'd be at the side of the road stretching and trying. It happened at Stirling as well. I spoke about it with Debbie Martin Kinsani because she passed me and took some of my energy away from me that day. Remember her saying? I was seeing other people suffering at that point and trying to G them along, going, come on, park run to go, come on, you know. And that was about as much me getting them. So I was both hamstrings, I could feel starting this feeling that I felt if I, now whether I could have kicked on and upped my pace or not is yet to be seen. But I felt that I'd learned from previous experiences at this point to say, just manage your effort here, manage your pace. If you're going to kick for him, do it in the last mile. No, the last 3 miles.
And can I ask, I mean, you've described that in the last two and a half minutes, but how long were you thinking about that on the day? Is that over the course of a mile and a half, 2 miles, or was it a constant thing you were going through in your head?
It was only really came into focus after 22 miles.
Right.
And okay. By then I'm thinking, I'm looking at my watch, I'm thinking I've got 4 and a bit miles left, whatever. I'm thinking if I can hold this together, I'm on for my goal. So I need to hold it together. And that involved for me making these adjustments and mindset adjustments and pace adjustments just to try and manage it. And I was suffering, to be honest. I was suffering. And that's, you know, how I do. I've tried to run negative splits, even splits before. I still suffer, and whether that's something that I then need to go look at to improve next time, I can address that. But for that day on Sunday in London, it was around about managing that moment in time.
Brilliant. So let's talk about that final part run.
Yeah.
How was it?
Well, I can see my Strava how much my pace dropped for the last 2 miles. 24, 25, whatever, you know, it was like 8 minutes 30 miles. And I noticed somebody commented on an Instagram post, and in fact Graham Connolly commented on an Instagram post to say those last few miles looked sere, you know, just to looking at or my Strava or whatever, and that made me think they were sere, because I was one trying to stave off these feelings of hamstring cramps that weren't far away, but also made me think about, you know, when I first started running, an 8:30 minute mile would have been my fastest mile. You know, so, and now it's my my slow smile. So it was almost like, aye, okay, bye. That probably was, I was suffering. They were there. However, I'm where I'm.
Yeah, and knowing Graham, as we do, that's a, you can see that as a compliment for him too. You know, definitely, you know, he's...
Because what I'm trying to do is, like, right, next time, next time is I need to be in a better shape to be able to sustain, you know, a 7:30 minute mile at that stage, you know. So it's all still
an evolution. What we should also say, I would just like to say that I would love 8:30 to be my consistent fastest mile. It isn't. I'm nowhere near that. So for everybody else, Stephen doesn't just rocked up and he's saying he's running 8:30 miles. You train to be doing what Stephen did last Sunday on the 3rd of October.
Listen, and John,
what you've learned from previous experience for last Sunday, but you've also learned for Sunday for futures, for the future, you know?
Definitely. And, you know, I took up running very much as a recreational runner.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no ever going to be winning races and winning park runs and 10Ks and stuff like that. I've worked hard to get to where I am. I'm not a natural athlete. Personally, I don't think that. And so for me, this how far I've come is just through volume, consistency, running with other people who inspire me, and also learning from other people. People have been in the podcast, but a lot wider than that, and taking all these ideas and concepts and mindsets and being able to squeeze a wee bit extra out of what talent I do have. And
but yeah, there's also a discipline and a dedication and a dream in there.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I think you have put yourself, I'm not going to get all gushy, but you have put yourself in that best position you can to achieve what you want to achieve. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the final mile. Let's talk about running along Birdcage Walk and doing the mile.
So, yeah, you turn right, come out off the embankment, you turn right just at the Houses of Parliament, that's Big Ben, and you head up towards Birdcage Walk, and it is busy there. You know, of course it is. It's the end of the London Marathon, and it's inspiring because, one, there's other people and other runners around you achieving greatness as well, and that's inspiring. And very much, you know, there was a couple of people walking and I was like, ah, come on, half a mile left, dig in. And maybe that's a bit of the coach coming out of me and stuff, but it was also to try and spur myself on, let's not beat about the bush. But it was around about when I turned into Birdcage Walk and you've got half a mile left at that point, that I was like, right, let's your hamstrings are all right, let's just get this home and get it done. And I knew also by then that I was going to achieve my goal, because I spend so much time when I'm running long distance doing micro calculations in my brain of how an extra 10 seconds per mile will have on predicted finish times. It's just how I occupy my brain. And I knew, I was like, right, even if I do, you know, 2 12-minute miles now, I'm there, and I'm no chance I'm doing 12-minute miles. I'm, you know, that type thing. So if I can just keep on hud it together and try and dip as low as I can for me, and that's at that point, you know, Buckingham Palace comes into view, you're starting to, John, we've spoken about it before, the tractor beam of the finish line is bringing you home.
Have you done that corner, again
at Belting doing the mall, like to the finish line, it's 365 yards, isn't it? Because you pass the sign saying 365 yards to go just at Buckingham Palace. And then I try to let loose.
Are you overtaking folk going down that mile?
Oh, it's like overtaking folks. Tramp on over folk. No, I went down the left-hand side because it was the quietest. And I thought, I got a good can finish line 40, and this is what gave me the best chance. So I belted down there, thinking I was running at about, you know, 4-minute miles stuff. In reality, I was running at like maybe 7-minute mile.
Oh, but you're a champion, man! You're leathering it down there, brilliant.
So crossed the finish line, and I can see on, I've got some photos for the finish line, I can see that, and I remember at the time the emotion of feeling like that I'd gotten my plan A, my goal had been achieved, and it's no been a year where plan A has been achieved and everything I've done. So I did feel a wee bit of greedy.
Aye, brilliant. I hope you were bawling like a bairn, because I got a bit emotional when I was up at Aberdeen at the football, watching stuff, and then I got your message to say that things have went all right, and I was like, oh, brilliant, man. I got a bit emotional because I know how much it means to you. Also know how much you put in. But you know what? Maybe what happened this year with July and all that sort of stuff, that's maybe all fed in to you achieving that. You know, it might have. So let's just clarify though, what was your finish time for the London Marathon 2021?
I was 3 hours, 12 minutes, 18 seconds.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So that's a marathon personal best, yeah?
Yeah, that was 4.5 minutes down from my previous PB. So
fucking hell, man. 4.5 minutes is a fair old chunk to take off your time.
It's okay. It certainly, I had it in my head that my plan A was to PB. So that was the goal. My plan B was to get under 3:20. There's a reason for that. And then my plan C was just to get round, because there's obviously a plan C just in case things go awry and it's just complete.
Aye, definitely, definitely. We'll get to that 3:20 thing in a minute. Mm-hmm. Right, we'll speak about that in a wee minute. But I need to ask you the question. Oh,
John, before you, just in that final throws at Birdcage Walk, I got a massive Young Hearts Run Free shout for somebody on the corner at Birdcage Walk, and it's a guy who follows us on Twitter and also listens, Phil Burnett, and that gave us a massive lift, so thank you.
Well done, Phil. Brilliant, man. And it means, if you ever see somebody, even if you didn't ken them, and they've got their name on their shirt, shout it out to them if you're at a marathon, because it's so powerful, that feeling. So thank you very much, Phil, for helping Stephen achieve his dreams.
Definitely.
Good man. No, good man.
And I'd back up what John says. See the lift that you can give somebody when you make this connection with them. It's not just random shouts to people, but when you see a John or a whatever and you shout out direct to them, so you've made this connection with that person. Yeah. See, I can't even tell people how powerful that can be. So,
Yeah, please do that. Everybody should do that. But before we get to the 3:20 thing, you know, a question that I know is on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, how is the schwankerism?
Oh! Seriously. So, you think, I'd got my schwanker trainers all geared up, ready. I took them down, still in their box and everything, carried them all to London in their box in this protective sort of vault. Stuff.
See, this is the Dick Whittington scene I've got in my head. He had a wee knapsack.
Yes.
You had a Nike bag over your shoulder.
I had a Nike box, everything, like as they came through the post. You know, I didn't really, but let's just imagine I did. But it was like everybody at the start line in my wave had caught the schwanker bug. Right, they were all there. You know, and no just Nikes. You know, there's, you know, New Balance have got their carbons, Hoka's got their carbons, but I was scanning the trainers and I was going, there's no many plimsolls here kicking about. And I was at one point, I took a photograph. Actually, I was sitting on the grass and I took a photo of these legs just with their shoes on, just to get an appreciation for the schwankerism that was going on. It was there en masse.
I've seen some photographs and there's some very brightly coloured, all sorts of stuff going on, but it's good to know that schwankerism is alive and kicking.
It was like the convention, and the carbon shoes as well that I wore worked brilliantly for me, I must say. And I know I might touch on Blood and Nike too much, but you know, they certainly helped me, I think, get to where I got on that particular day. You know, shaved a few seconds off, maybe. But you can't just wear them and expect to magical happen.
No one may be going after listening to this and going, give me a pair of them.
They feel different. They feel a little bit alien to start off with if you've never ran in them before. So if you are thinking of, you know, making the leap, and you know it's an expensive business, and I hummed and hawed about it for many months, you know, saying, "Oh, shit, that's a lot of money and stuff." I'm glad that I eventually took that leap, but then you just keep them in the box till race day, get a few runs in them beforehand to get used to the feeling, because they differ. They've got a feeling of this feeling of forward propulsion. It's hard to explain until you actually feel it and use them.
Try them out before you turn up on race day, definitely.
Yeah, and they'll not be for everybody.
Nah, because for some folk, I feel like you're bouncing about like Tigger.
Yes, you know what I mean? Stacked high, and you're kind of forced to run more on your front foot, your toes, you know, so that could, for some people, mean, you know, exposure to new injury risks and what have you. It could have well been why I was feeling my Achilles the week before, because I'd done, you know, my previous 2 weekends long runs in them to try and get used to the feeling, and that may well be that, and I'm happy to accept that, because I've still managed to achieve what I wanted to, but it could be it. If I was running them daily, that could be the silliest thing to do.
Yeah. And again, this is due to the individual person, isn't it? People react differently to stuff. So, the marathon's done. Two questions. You can choose which way you want to answer this. Tell us about your post-marathon food, and tell us about your recovery.
So, post-marathon food. Well, first, before we go and move on to the important topic of food, is the finish line sort of vibes. Okay, so post marathon, very different process than normal, because you want to get a medal put around your neck. You went and got your kit bag from the appropriate stand, all fantastically organised down the mall, Union Jacks both sides, you know, just. and what have you, but I collected my bag from my bag truck, and I got chatting to the volunteers. You know, I was like in that race high sort of way, chat, and there was a couple of volunteers from Bracknell Forest Running Club who gave me my bag, and I must give them a shout out as well, because they were brilliant, and I was thanking them as much as, you know, they were congratulating me for standing there all day. The volunteers, I must say, that organisation that must go into just that part of the day is huge. The weekend, the months up to it, whatever. And it's people like that that make it happen. So I was just wanting to show some love for that. And in particular, the little connections that you make at a finish line when you're on that race high. Yeah, and there was other people as well, because I was in a chatty, happy mood, of course.
So did you make any pals?
I did. I made a couple of new pals. A lad who actually, I heard a Scottish accent, and I was wanting somebody to take a photo of me. So you kind of, this boy's Scottish. So I asked him to take a photo of me on the mall and stuff, and it turns out he'd run 2 hours 40 minutes. He was chuffed as well. Boy Stuart McDougall. So hi to Stuart, because I told him about the Young Hearts Run Free podcast, of course. Another lad who I only started chatting to him because he had a Crawley Town football shirt on. Lad's name's Richard Connell. We knew follow each other on Twitter. And he was done, I think, his first marathon, 3 hours 30, done brilliantly. And it's these little new connections that you make, you know, that just highlight how special the world and the community is. So we harp on about ultra running and how much that community is something that we feel a huge part of, and the connections are special. But here was me at the end of the biggest city marathon in the world, still making these connections with new people, and it's just brilliant.
Right, you mentioned Richard. Did they run the marathon in a Crawley Town shirt?
Aye.
Oh, fucking brilliant, man. I must say this. I know this is about you and your London Marathon experience, but I've got to say this. The first time I ran the London Marathon, one of my pals used to live in Perth, a boy, Ali Rennie, lived in Perth, but massive Hibs fan. He now lives in Crawley. right? Goes to see Crawley Town, he took a brilliant photograph of me outside Birdcage Walk, where the reception area used to be. So there you go. So these wee connections. But you're right, regardless of where you are, speak to folk and make these connections. It's brilliant. It's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah. So that, you know, that was the finish line, and I was in no rush to get anywhere as well. I was just checking my phone for messages. Hundreds of messages from.
And were you doing your kudos? Were you doing your kudos shake on the mall?
I saved that to the hotel room later on.
Brilliant.
So I was just and I obviously spoke to my wife Fiona, and she'd been watching intently with the kids on my tracking and stuff. So that was quite a nice emotional. Also wanted them at that point to be there.
Aye, I know.
But now, oh come on, what a cuddle. it was just a nice vibe, and they were, again, process wise, you know, different, but they had it working. And I'm sure they didn't get everything right, the organisers, with all the new adjustments and things like that, but I felt that they did a pretty fantastic job considering all the changes that they've had to make to get this event going ahead. So
aye, fair play, well said. Yeah. And also, we should also say that if London Marathon want to use this as promotional material for 2022, just fire on. It's cool, man. Just chip in.
I think we can put our bank account details up on the show notes.
Or our PayPal. That would be
sorry,
cool.
Our right, listen, giving page.
Let's get so to the food, man.
Food. I was fortunate that I had a few other people that I knew running the marathon with different times and stuff like that, and one of those lads was a guy who trains with me on a Thursday night in our Activate crew, and Dr. Arder, Jamie, who also had a superb day on Sunday busting his PB to shreds. I think he whacked a good bit off it. He was 3:37 and he was delighted. So I went and met Jamie in Clapham where he was staying, and we went out for celebratory beers and pizzas. We had wee daughter Ailsa, who was brilliant as well. So that was great, being able to celebrate with somebody. Shout out for Jerry Healy and Martin Gray at this point as well, because they offered me coming here a beer with us, but it was at the other side of the toon.
Aye.
Logistically, it would have been proved difficult, but I really appreciated the offer. So caught up with Jamie, had a few beers, we chewed the fat over our respective days and kind of got caught up. But it was brilliant being able to do that. I really appreciated it. And we went for pizza. Jamie, brilliant research from him here. Scouted out this wood-fired Italian pizza place that was doing free pizzas if you brought your marathon finisher's medal.
Oh, man. Brilliant. Yeah. Free as in no money whatsoever.
Free pizza. You know?
That's the kind of place we want to hear about.
We didn't just go in there and order two pizzas, obviously. Tap water. You know, we enjoyed some starters and some beers as well. But the pizzas were knocked off the bill, which is great.
Fantastic. And you are a pizza fan, obviously. We've spoken about that before. That's your thing, isn't it?
Pizza fanatic. And yeah, it's definitely a nice carrot on the stick at the end of a marathon for me. And yeah, we've got a thread on Twitter that shows all my food pictures. So feel free.
Well, you know what? Thank God for Twitter, because it was either your food or your result that put all that social media, all went to hell, didn't it? Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, the whole lot was shot to bits. And I thought, thank God for Twitter, and I've got food photos to look at. So it was a veritable feast.
If you weren't running on or involved in London Marathon or another marathon, because there was a big Mother Marathon in Inverness, Loch Ness at the weekend, then my Facebook and Instagram and Twitter feeds were just full, eh? You were like that. You'd have been like that. Aye. I'm all looking at social media today. Do you know, if I'd been injured on Sunday and I hadn't been able to do it, I would have went like that. I'm signing out of all social media. Deleting Strava.
So listen, man, we're about an hour and a half in here. Yeah, my way about this. It's, time's flying in. So tell me about your legs just now. How's your legs? You've spoke about your undercarriage, but how's your legs?
Undercarriage. Leggies are recovering well, as expected. I've been for a couple of runs. It's Thursday today, and I ran on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'll run tonight. So the little aches and pains are kind of starting to die down, and any lasting aches are starting to, I can see where the hot spots are almost, top of my hamstring, my left hamstring, my left Achilles is still a wee bit nippy. But yeah, they seem okay. I'm not going to go and do anything daft. I find keeping moving is the best thing for me to keep the aches and pains away, weirdly.
Sure. And is that you for 2021 with regards to events?
Yes. Yeah. That is for 2021. I think I've hogged the events for 2021 quite enough. So cool. Yeah. Nice relaxing end to the year.
But let's cast an eye in the future. You mentioned about getting your PB 312. Plan B was 320. What's next for you?
So the plan B being 320 was so that I could gain good for age qualifying times for other marathons that I've got on my bucket list. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that was that. So I've done, we know about the Six Stars marathons, Abbott World Majors, the six big marathons of the world are London, Berlin, New York, Chicago, Boston and Tokyo. So I've got my three stars now. I've done London before, but I've got London, Berlin and New York. So this opens the door for me to be able to put in for another one of those, just to get another one ticked off. So
awesome.
3:20 was the qualifying time to be able to throw your hat in the ring for Boston next year. So I feel like I need to seize that moment. Now I've got a qualifying time for it, I need to put in for it. But a qualifying time for Boston doesn't immediately get you a place in Boston, because then they put in how many qualifying, it's only the quickest times that get in. So although the qualifying time's 3:20 to put in, it might be that the qualifying time's 3:15, because it's only the quickest people in that qualifying batch until their numbers fill up who get in.
And it's still a ballot.
It's not a ballot as such. It's basically a leaderboard.
Fastest first.
Yeah. Cool. So say my age group's got 500 spots allocated to it, and the person who's 501st on the leaderboard doesn't get in. That's my understanding of it.
Cool. Okay. Bob. Well, very, very best of luck. Get that hat and fling it in there.
I feel that I kind of need to, whilst the going's good, and just Boston's been a bit of a dream. So if I can manage to get there, it would be a bit surreal.
And then we'll have to do another podcast to talk about, another episode to talk about your Boston experience.
Well, let's see.
You know what though, this has been brilliant. This is going to furnish anybody's long run this weekend. Listen to this London experience. Is there anything else you feel, have you missed anything else you want to speak about?
It's more around about just showing an appreciation for all the messages and kind words that I got afterwards as well from people, especially from people who, you know, are being inspired by me, and I really appreciate that's something that really motivates me, is being able to, somebody looking at me saying, well, if he can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. That's no pit myself down. It helps me and stuff. And also just the other people that I know who did it, like our Five Star Active Running Club. So we had like Jamie I've spoken about, but we also had like Tracy McGregor, Ken Tree, Lucy Pierce, all down there at London representing the club. They all done brilliantly. And we had others representing the club up at Loch Ness at the weekend who were achieving like legendary status up there by, you know, people who started on their 0 to 5K block just not that long ago and knew they're running 26.2 miles. So a huge congrats to all them. The other lad that I wanted to say well done to was the lad who won the race from the mass start at the weekend. Okay, so he wasn't in the elites. He won the race from the mass, and that's a guy called Kenny Wilson, way up Moray way. He runs for Moray Road Runners. He did it in 2 hours 18, and that, just wanted to acknowledge that. That's just
phenomenal. Phenomenal run. Brilliant.
You win it
brilliant.
For the mass start and stuff. So, that's a thing that I took away from, and this is something from our podcast, John. Charlotte Purdue was the first female Brit over the line.
Okay. Yep.
She's had an up and down year because she got dropped out of the Olympic marathon time. And it's just the resilience and bounce back ability to do that is just
definitely
fantastic. And then also heard afterwards she was speaking about it and how she's now going into winter training, you know, now that's out of the way, and she doesn't run in the dark. So it's all on the treadmill.
I'll get her a phone because I'm dealing with Project Dart the new.
I know that.
And then also noticed on pacing Charlotte for the first half, I think, was it Ailish McCogan?
Mm-hmm.
Was it pacing her? So there's loads of stuff, stuff we could speak about. So brilliant. But you know what? Yeah. Let's wrap this up. I think that's been brilliant, man.
That's
really,
been great.
Really enjoyed it. It's been a great insight. And hopefully, you mentioned about people being inspired by you. I get inspired by you regularly, and I have been since I started running, but not just running, other shit and all. But I think it's great that you're quite humble about that, but it's also good as well to see that people, I think what we've discussed today, people can get on that marathon journey or half marathon journey. You didn't hit a good and run a marathon, but it's just about pushing yourself. And I think listening to things like this will hopefully give people a wee bit more confidence to go, you know what, I can do that. So hopefully that's the message that's coming through.
Yeah. It's been great just recalling it all. And I'm obviously still on a wee bit of a high for it because I got my plan A and I was on a bit of a low back in July, to be honest. So,
He's got a big cheesy smile on his purse right now.
There's one thing that I wanted to drop in at the end, and that's a dialect dictionary word, John.
Oh, we weren't expecting that today, but why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, just a quickie because it was something that at the start line where things are a bit tight in the field. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you're jostling a wee bit, and I'd call it in my head. I was calling it in my head. This is a bit of a stooshy.
Okay. Is that your word, stooshy?
Yeah, stooshy. STOOSHY.
Okay.
Just a wee bit of a.
Wee bit of a stooshy. I thought they were going to come down with some sort of geezer.
It's not. It's like stramash, part of it. It's a stooshy. Okay, it's all kicking off.
A fucking difference between a stooshy and a stramash.
Yep, exactly. So there you go.
I think the stooshy is the wee bit before the stramash, isn't it? A stooshy could turn into a stramash.
That's it. A stooshy is a precursor to a stramash.
Aye. Well, well done on avoiding that stramash scenario. Yes, by dealing with a wee stooshy. And very well done again on your 3 hours, 12 minutes. That's absolutely phenomenal. So this wraps up our first episode of season 4.
Launch episode season 4.
It's an absolute belter of a. Can I promise I'll all be as good as this? But
we'll have some more inspirational guests than Stephen along the way. But you know, who knows if the content will be as good as this?
Exactly. Let's leave it on that. If you've been listening to this on a long run, we hope you've really enjoyed it and been inspired by it. And if you're out doing shorter runs and you're listening to this over 2 or 3, brilliant. That's good. That's all good too. So, but thank you all very much for listening. And there's still a lot more to come. But I'll say bye bye, and I'll hand over to the PB man to say bye bye too.
No, thank you for listening to us for the last hour and a half. Just recall that London experience. And if anybody's thinking about it, you know, I could put in for London. Just do it. Just get your name in the ballot, and then if you get in, then deal with the consequences after that. Just do it.